The Center Update with Dr. Gary, an opportunity for me to share a bit about what goes on behind the scenes, things that aren't necessarily apparent for everyone who's just here on Sundays or during the week. First of all, I just want to mention that, to remind everyone that immediately following the service today, we have a picnic, a church-wide picnic schedule over at the park, just down the street. And also, I just want to mention that in your program, on a little insert, there's an error with respect to the community member orientation. It's Sunday, October 9th, not the 2nd. It's printed correctly in all the bathrooms. So trust what you see in the bathrooms. Not so much with the insert. We'll try to have those fixed by next time. So during my center updates the last couple times, I've mentioned the fact that 9 out of 10 churches are in decline, and that behooves us to know what the 10% that aren't in decline are doing. And it's important that you know that your leadership, Dr. Jane and I, and your board are moving into doing the kinds of things that the 10% are doing to be thriving. And among those things is a movement from being a minister-centric organization to a mission-centric organization. In other words, what brings us together is not who the ministers are, although we really want you to come because of us too, the two of us, right? But more importantly, because of what the church is about, what it stands for in this community, which is transforming lives and inspiring people to make a positive difference in the world. And as we shift the focus and the emphasis on fulfilling our purpose, then it frees the minister from trying to be all things to all people. Can you see how that's a healthier way to do church? The second thing is that we have to create tipping points within the church in order to shift the culture. And the challenge is that, as I talked about last time, was that most of us in New Thought think of ourselves and enjoy the label, well, we're like herding cats. And I showed a movie last time about herding cats, and also mentioned that the challenge is that that doesn't really move us into the ability to create an organization that has integrity, that has accountability, that has self-responsibility, and is void of drama. And so we're wanting to move towards ways in which we can be organizationally, really in ownership of what we're trying to do together. The thing I want to mention today is millennials. Are you familiar with the term millennial? You know, that's the group of folks that are between the ages of 18 and 30-ish. And those churches that are thriving have figured out a way in which they can draw young people into their energetic field. And it's a challenge for congregations that are primarily of the vintage flavor. And so it's a challenge to try to, in the context of making ourselves available and open for that energy of youth and the vitality and creativity and the positivity and the dedication to service and making the world a better place. It's a challenge to open ourselves to enable our congregation to welcome that age group in, because it means that we have to shift a bit in how we be as a church community in order for those folks to feel welcomed. Now, when I was 20 years old, I walked into the church for the very first time. When I was 20 years old, that was like 46 years ago. And I got to tell you, me and my fiance at the time were the youngest people in the entire church. Everyone was really, really old, like they were like in their 40s. And it felt hard to kind of connect. And so it takes a special community to make create a welcoming environment for young people to really feel comfortable and welcomed and able to be here. And the mistake that many churches make in their effort to try to include millennials is that they try to get them involved in ways in which are not necessarily there aligned with their energy or their interests. And so Jane and I are moving towards presenting some activities and ideas in which we can integrate young people into our ministry in a more expeditious way, including through spirit groups and in some other projects that we have in the offing. And remember to mark your calendars for October 2nd. On that Sunday, it'll be a very, very special Sunday. I am going to unveil the next possibility for our entire organization to be more welcoming for millennials. Wouldn't that be great? All right, with that said, let's get ready for our fellowship song. No, we already did a fellowship song. That's meditation, right? Yes. I'm back. So as we ready ourselves for our meditation experience, let's keep in mind that this day is a remembrance of 9/11. And keeping in mind the tragedy of that event, in the broader perspective of all the ills in this world, the conflicts that exist, and all the people that are impacted by the disconnect, the separation, the isolation, the politics, all the ways in which our human family is in this experience of evolving to a better place and yet experiencing tremendous birthing pains. So as we begin this time together, I invite you into a rhythmic pattern of breathing. Breathing in and out for the same duration. And to begin to bring yourselves into a deeper experience of a heart-centered presence. Bring into your mind someone or something that you appreciate. And as we begin to open our hearts to an image of a friend or a beloved life partner or a pet or a fond memory, we gradually open ourselves, begin to settle into this moment, and energetically begin to align with a movement of spirit that can really make a difference in what's going on in this world. Our prayers have power, and that power arises from within us as we settle ourselves into the awareness of our oneness with God. And as you continue in those feelings of appreciation, and as you allow those feelings to extend beyond your physical self, we create in this room an energetic field. A field that not only is heart-opening, but enables us to be an instrument of that activity of spirit that is right now seeking to bring a greater depth of peace and civility and calm to all that is troubling us. And so we are reminded that there is a legacy that is why we're sent to this world, a legacy of hurt, of suffering, of separation, of dis-ease, the haves and have-nots, all the ways in which we can find fault or error or something amiss, we can remind ourselves that this is a calling for us, a calling to delve deeply into the awareness of our oneness with Spirit. And so let us each now in our own way enter into a deeper connection to that oneness of spirit, and with our open heart allow ourselves to infill this field of energy with compassion and understanding, to allow this to be the context within which we take into our hearts the remembrance of this day and all those who have been impacted by it. And so with compassion and love and understanding and our deep hope and prayer for a peace that passes understanding, we enter into the silence together. And so as we begin to return to this moment and this place, we carry with us the awareness of the activity of Spirit. And in spite of the appearances that we face in the world, in spite of all of the things that are happening that seemingly are dividing us, we give thanks at the very depths of our being that these are symptoms of the birth, the awakening, the unfolding, the evolution of Spirit. And for this activity of Spirit, and for who we are, as each one of us is the one, as each one of us is the change we seek, as each one of us is a witness to the activity of Spirit, we give thanks. Thank you, God. And so it is.
Whoa. I have to follow that. Thank you. My father used to sing that song, and he would sing it to my mother. So whenever I hear it, I get all verklempt, you know. Well, good morning. It's good to be back after 2 weeks in Canada. I was visiting my daughter and her family for 5 days, and then in Halifax, and then I went to Ottawa and visited my son and his family for 5 days. So I've been hanging out with grandchildren between the ages of almost 1 to just turned 17.
Wow.
And the almost 1-year-old is starting to walk, and the 17-year-old is learning to drive. Both equally stressful things for her parents. So a wide range of experiences on this trip. And I love traveling back to Canada. I love it. And although the cultures above and below the border are very, very similar, there are some differences. There are some things that I miss about my homeland, mostly family related. But there are some other things, like Tim Hortons green tea. And washrooms. See, that's what they call restrooms in Canada. And I can actually say washrooms, and people know what I mean. And watching Canadian news programs. It's a whole different perspective. And free health care, you know, there's a few things that I miss. A few things. But then being there for 2 weeks, it reminded me of some things that I don't really miss. Like the deflated Canadian dollar, the extra sales tax that's tacked on to your purchases, and yes, I know it pays for that health care. Celsius temperatures. Kilometers per hour. I mean, Canada went metric when I was 18, and I thought that was the worst betrayal that my country ever did to me. So I spent decades figuring out in my head what it meant. And when I moved here, it was such a joy. But the final thing that I did not miss and do not miss is on the airplanes in Canada, watching the safety spiel in English and then in French. The entire thing twice through. Anyway. And I miss my husband and my friends and my church. So it's a balancing act for me whenever I go to Canada on these solo trips, and saying goodbye is always very bittersweet. So what better time to write a talk called Suffering is Optional, I thought. Made sense. And we've heard this idea that pain happens in our lives, but that the suffering doesn't have to. And in fact, a great part of the pain we experience is directly tied to the suffering that we put ourselves through. Traveling alone is a challenge for me. I do it because spending time with my kids and my grandkids is a very high priority for me in my value system, but it's typically not easy to travel by myself. First of all, I'm always schlepping around way more than I need, and I'm getting better at tightening up on that, but it always feels like I need an extra hand in there and I don't have it. I always get a lot of reading done and work done when I'm traveling alone. In fact, I wrote this talk in a bus terminal in Ottawa, Ontario. But I find myself envying people who travel together and share that experience, especially if something challenging happens, like it did in Pembroke, Ontario. You've probably never heard of Pembroke, Ontario. I really hadn't until my son moved into the vicinity. But it's a small town that you go to in order to catch a bus from near where my son lives on the Army base to Toronto, which is where I was going. This bus goes to Ottawa, you get a different bus and go to Toronto. And there I was at 5:15 a.m. in Pembroke with my ticket in hand to get me to Toronto. Except I noticed on it, it just said Pembroke to Ottawa. It didn't say Toronto. But I thought, well, when I give this to the driver, he's probably going to give me back something. Well, he did not. He took my ticket. Now, I had printed another one of that ticket, but it still just said Pembroke to Ottawa. And so I thought, you know, that might get in my way when I'm trying to get on a bus to Toronto now. And I have flown enough to know that if you are going to go on, if you have a stop in between, how many boarding passes do you need?
Two.
And I did not have two. So there I, when I ordered this ticket, it was online in June. I did it all by myself, which was scary enough. And I could remember several times during the process, these warnings would jump up. Make sure you print off your boarding passes. Don't forget. Do it, do it. So I was already kind of upset about that. So there I am on the bus, sitting next to this lovely, elderly French-Canadian woman. And we start discussing our trips. And I could see her wonderful wisdom and her courage. She was not afraid to travel on her own. She was off to meet her sister, and they were going to have some wonderful adventures together. And as I'm listening to this delightful soul, I become aware that there is another conversation going on inside of my head. My inner roommate, you know that insane voice inside, the voice of doom and gloom? I'm hearing, well, this is wonderful to hear, but what about your ticket that you don't have? You've only got the first start of your trip. You remember what it said? It said, warning, print it off. What are you going to do now? And then the stories began in earnest. I could very vividly imagine a bus driver stopping me and saying, no, this is the wrong boarding pass. And I would insist that I had paid for a ticket. And it's not my fault if only one thing printed off. And I could hear this whole thing going on. And suddenly I caught myself. Whoa, what's going on inside of me? And I noticed how tense I had become. Oh. So I breathed, took a moment to relax, returned my attention to my seatmate, who's telling me that her husband of 62 years had passed away 3 years ago, and now that she was adjusting to traveling alone, and that her son had died, and now two of her children currently had life-threatening illnesses. And I really looked at this petite powerhouse of a woman, and I saw her spaciousness and her resilience and her ability to stand in such tragic news and be able to accept the sorrow with such grace and to grow from it and to feel deep gratitude for her life as it was. And here I am in the midst of my drama. They aren't going to let me on the damn bus, do you understand? In fact, my inner roommate had helpfully returned in full force and was offering me all the various possible scenarios. How else can I get to Toronto? Maybe I can buy another. I don't have to buy another ticket. I already paid for a full ticket. But I'll bet you the bus is full. I'll bet you there's no room. They wouldn't let me on anyways. Maybe I can get to the Ottawa airport somehow and buy a one-way ticket to Toronto. And what am I going to do if I miss my plane in Toronto to bring me home? On and on and on it went. And then I stopped, and here's what I realized. How much the ego loves a fight. I could feel the strengthening that was going on as I was imagining someone or something being against me and stopping me. Wow. You know, it's really helpful for me to write about this stuff and to talk about it. Because when I write down the kinds of thoughts that are in my head, I can see these are insane ramblings. It's very evident to me. Can you imagine if I would have been doing it out loud on that bus? And playing the both parts of the bus driver and me, and no, and yes, and no? Whoa. And as I wrote them, I clearly saw something. I was not traveling alone. I was completely tethered to an insane person who was giving me this running commentary on every possible thing that could go wrong. Wow, I'd rather be traveling alone. So I decided at that point I needed an intervention. So I got out my phone, of course, and I tried to check email, and I could not focus on any of the emails until I got to this one. Alan Cohen's thought for the day. Quite often, it's the belief in difficulty that makes something difficult. A belief in ease would make it easier. Well, I have to tell you, I nearly laughed out loud when I read that. So I stopped and I went to my heart. And I decided what I need to do here is to get myself to a place of gratitude. Gratitude for this beautiful pre-dawn ride that I had been blessed with. Not only had I witnessed this magnificent sunrise, but the morning mist made it even more magical. And gratitude for this wise woman seated next to me who had unknowingly been the delivery system of the universe's get over it message. Gratitude for the ride to even catch that bus. I had wonderful quality time with my son at 4:30 a.m. Gratitude for the opportunity to see my son and my daughter and their families. Gratitude for each and every one of my grandchildren. I thought of each of them individually, and my heart widened and opened in gratitude for every gift that they bring me. Gratitude for my husband for holding the fort so I could spend my time in grandchild nirvana. Gratitude for the staff and the congregation of this church for supporting me in doing that. And on it went, my heart widening with every image until, bingo, I hit pay dirt. And I felt total gratitude to the gate agent that I knew without a doubt was going to just print me off another ticket and hand it to me. Filled with gratitude. So we arrived at the terminal. I said au revoir to my French-Canadian friend. Told her to have fun on her travels. Walked up to the gate agent, shared my dilemma. Within 5 seconds, I had a ticket to Toronto in my hands. Without even an admonition or a look that said, you should have done this yourself. Nothing. Just here's the ticket. I spent the best part of a 2.5-hour bus ride fretting, stewing, worrying, expecting the worst. All the while, the universe is saying, chill, settle down, it's going to be okay, enjoy the ride. And even though I kept trying, it wasn't until I read Alan's words that it got through. And I remembered, oh yeah, gratitude. Gratitude, it's the magic bullet. It's the proactive power. It's the kick-butt elixir. Expect the best. Expect ease. Give thanks in advance. That's what the master teacher taught. Jesus thanked God before even saying what it was that he was praying about. That's what we need to do. As Barry Neal Kaufman describes it, gratitude is one of the sweet shortcuts to finding peace of mind and happiness inside. As Sean pointed out to me, that's a spiritual life hack. The sweet shortcut to peace. And it makes all the difference in our experience. How we experience our lives depends on what's going on within us. It's kind of like this. Thank you. kind of says it, doesn't it? What was your experience of the first video? Yep. And the second one? And what was different about the two? Just the music had the same, say again? And your attitude. Yes. Do you see how you changed the way you felt and had a different experience from one to the other? Life is a much different taxi ride when we are in our hearts. Much different. Life is so much richer when we're not listening to that voice. So pain happens. Suffering is optional. What in your life are you expecting to be difficult or impossible? Where is your ego gearing up for a fight? Where is that roommate giving you the commentary, blathering on about the worst possible outcome? Gratitude can stop it in its tracks. Do you see? Shift from head to heart. Find one thing to be grateful for. Then add another and add another. And just like when we're exercising a muscle and we keep adding weight, little by little, the heart opens. We gain a larger capacity for feeling gratitude. And here's the thing that happens. The deeper intelligence of the heart becomes available to us when we are there. It's like a portal to the divine wisdom within us. Gratitude helps to quiet that inner commentary, and actually the portal takes us to the true companion we have on this journey of life. Do you see? Because the commentary drowns out that sweet, small voice. Gratitude ramps it back up. While I was at my son's, we watched a movie called 90 Minutes in Heaven. Has anybody seen that movie? It's a true story of a Baptist preacher who was in a car wreck and pronounced dead on the scene. And later, much later, 90 minutes later, he came to. And he came back. He came back to pain, pain, pain. His body was shattered. He also came back to incredible challenges. The possibility of losing a limb, perhaps never walking again. His medical bills were astronomical. The people who hit him were state protected, and there was a cap on how much they were liable for, which would barely maybe cover the medical bills. The treatments he went through were excruciating, and he felt utterly forsaken by the God he had served for years. And this pastor went through a deep depression. He was despondent, listless, angry, in pain constantly. And during that 90 minutes that he had died, this man had tasted an unconditional love, so deep, so blissful, that he did not want to return to earth. Spoiler alert, much of this movie is pretty depressing, and the acting not so good. However, there comes a time in his recovery when he discovers that sweet spot of gratitude, and he finds something to be grateful for. And then a little bit more, and a little bit more. Slowly he fans the flame, and it builds until he finds the gift in the experience, and he uses it to bless others. Now, this movie has a definite fundamentalist bent to it, but the message, totally universal. Pain happens, suffering's optional. This in no way is meant to diminish anyone's pain of anything that you may be going through. It's not about building mental walls to numb ourselves from any pain. It's about letting our heart open and in that spaciousness to host whatever's going on. Do you see the difference? letting the voice of the divine come forth and bring a blessing amidst all the pain. And lest you think that I have this down, by the way, think again. I was waiting to board that bus in Toronto with my magic ticket in hand, and they announced that we would be boarding by group numbers. I looked at my ticket. It was boarding group number 6. I thought, great. Because I just got here and bought this ticket, I'm in the last boarding group. I'll be the last one. Blah, 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 blah. And I stopped. Whoa, wait. And I went on my gratitude rampage. And I remembered how 30 seconds ago, I was thanking God that I was on this bus. And so I got myself back to that place of gratitude. My heart opened again, and I thought, it doesn't matter when I get on the bus. I've got a seat. You know, it doesn't matter. It'll be just wonderful, however it is. And I just felt so open and excited and grateful. And then they called the boarding groups, and they said, numbers 1 through 10 line up. I was not group 6. I was the 6th person to get on. So imagine catching that roommate mid-sentence saying with love and compassion, thank you for pointing that out, but let's try gratitude and see what happens here. Let's just do that. So gratitude is the missing piece. You know, I remember reading a story in a book called Waking Up by Sam Harris, where he notices a plumbing leak in the ceiling of a storage room and notices it pretty quickly from when it started. So they hurry, they get a plumber who fixes it, they replace the drywall, they plaster, they paint, all's well. And he's filled with gratitude that they found it so early. Except a similar leak appeared in an adjacent room a couple days later. And he went through the whole spiel again. This time, not quite as grateful as the last time. A little on the annoyed side, but still, got through it, took care of it. Then a pipe burst, flooding 600 square feet of ceiling. This time, the repairs took weeks, books got wet, the carpet had to be shampooed. Now he is pretty aggravated, but took care of it, all was well. Until one day, he heard the unmistakable sound of water dripping. And he looked in the room, and he saw the ceiling ballooning. And he lost his mind this time. He started raging and so angry, and he and his wife ran to grab the buckets and everything and bring them back in. And his wife says, there's the water. His wife says, well, you know, we can be grateful that it's not sewage coming out of those pipes. And you know, he got it. He got it. He stopped. He saw. Suddenly saw with such clarity that if there was sewage coming out of those pipes, he'd be down on his knees wishing that it was water. And he got himself to a whole new place. A change in perspective changes the entire experience. A large two-engine train was crossing the country, and after it had gone some distance, one of the engines broke down, and the engineer thought, no problem. You know, we've got another engine. We carry on. And then farther down the track, the other engine dies, and the train comes to a standstill. And so he makes an announcement to the passengers. He says, I have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that both engines have failed, and we're going to be sitting here for a while. And he could hear the rising, angry voices throughout the train. And then he added, the good news is, we aren't in an airplane. And after seeing the movie Sully on the weekend, anybody saw that movie? Woo! I have to agree. That's the movie Tom Hanks plays Captain Sullenberger, who landed the plane in the Hudson River with the losing both engines. If you get a chance to see that movie, I highly recommend it. So pain happens. Whoops, there's our train. Pain happens. Suffering is optional. So I invite you to look at one area in your life where you're experiencing pain. It could be physical, mental, emotional, a combination, all of them, whatever. And first of all, have compassion for yourself. Stop. Have compassion. Have compassion for how hard it is to be there. Feel that kindness that you can give to yourself. Then go to your heart. Sit in the silence. Feel the spaciousness of your heart. Allow the gratitude within you to rise up and be expressed. You might have to start with one small thing and expand. Work your way up. And then let your heart grow. Let it expand with kick-butt gratitude. And let it bless your life. And above all, remember, it could be sewage. God bless you.